let's press on. So the next one before the invited speaker is Hatice Erbil from Hacettepe University. And I've asked Hatice to say a couple of words about the centre that she is, she's in that university, because it's the biggest and most active centre of CA in Turkey. And it'd be nice for us to know a bit more about it. So before you start, maybe a couple of words about that.
Okay, well, we, it's a research centre using conversational analysis, and it's only six of us now. But we're quite active, we're doing data sessions and reading groups every week, and we are hoping to collaborate with other centers all over the world. So if any of you are interested, you can always contact us. If you want to come and visit Turkey as a speaker or anything, just contact us. And well, I'll be talking today about the sequential positioning of assessments in TV audience interaction. I know that TV audience interaction is a very broad term. When I use this term, but I'm not referring to all sorts of TV audience interaction. I'll specify it more while talking about the research setting. So before moving on to my own study, I want to give a definition of an assessment from a CA point of view, stated by Derek Edwards and Potter, Jonathan Potter, a kind of action in which some object, person, situation, or activity is being evaluated. This is how I take assessment to be. And assessments are very important, and I never noticed that before I started doing my analysis and my transcription, because in my data, it turned out that the whole conversation was kind of organized around assessments. And as Pomerantz put it, the depiction of an event in question is not complete with the referencing alone, but we need a point, we need to make a point. And I noticed that in my data quite a lot as well. So previous literature on sequential positioning of assessments, there are quite a bit of research on assessments from like epistemics in assessment sequences, embodied assessments, but I'll mostly focus on the sequential positioning. So in her initial work, Pomerantz identified three positions. She argued that on the occasion of participation, in our reports of previously participated activities, and in next turns to initial assessments, which we call second assessments. And in her study, she mostly focused on the second assessments. And later on, we have more studies here. I won't go into details, but you can see the references there. Charles looked at assessments in a couple of studies, in telephone conversations, and in institutional settings, interviews. And we've got in task-based talk, we've got in dinner talk, which is closer to my study, storytelling sequences. And also we all know about John Harris' studies on epistemic stages in assessment sequences. So my study will build on this literature. So earlier findings suggest that we can place assessments following an initial assessment, as we said, a second assessment. Closings of topics or stories or interviews, another place that assessments are found to occur. At delicate moments, this is what Mondado found out in dinner conversations, and on the occasion of participation. So I found some other positions that assessments occur. I need to talk about the research setting very briefly. The TV show that the participants are watching are screen marriage shows in Turkey. So what are they? They are actually reality shows, but different from like Blind Date, and that in these shows people actually get married. So there have been more than 1,000 marriages so far, and in three national channels, almost like 10 hours a day in total, every single day, you can watch screen marriage shows. And apparently they get applicants, like thousands and thousands of applicants every week, and they only select certain amount of numbers. So they're quite a big phenomenon in Turkey at the moment. Well, for the last 10 years. So how do these shows look like? We've got two presenters there, this guy and this lady over there. And this is a participant. So one thing I want to tell about participants is they are from the ages between like 18 to 80 year olds, actually joined the show. So this is how the participant is introduced. And then we get this short video biography of participants. I'll just translate this so that you get an idea of how it looks like, because it's relevant to how they make assessments. So Miss Gül, 53-year-old, lived in England for 25 years, married twice, doesn't have a kid. That is the information. And they keep playing this throughout the show. Also in the show, we've got this meeting corner here. So this is the participant in the show, and this guy is a candidate. So you go to the show, you introduce yourself, and people start calling you. I want to come and meet you. And then they have to come to show. You can't meet outside. And this is the meeting corner where you meet your candidate spouse for the first time. And usually they make their decisions in 2 weeks' time, whether they'll get married or not. Yeah. We also have the audience in the show. So these women are all there, and they are making comments about the suitability of couples. Like, you should go for this guy or forget about him, kind of comments. Yes, and these are the TV audience, the participants in my study. So I'm not looking at the data in the show, but I recorded women when they are watching this show in their homes. And I've got like some 20-year-old students and some retired people, all females though, to make it more, you know, the naturally occurring data. These women come together every day anyways, and they watch the shows together, so I prefer to record them. Right, the sequential positions that I found. I'll show short videos, and I tried to put some subtitles in English so that you can follow it, but you've got the handouts as well. So the first position that I found is an offer to reinitiate talk. Okay, reinitiation could be problematic. I'm open to suggestions about this, but in my data, I found that the talk is how shake-off and sex culture adjourned very often. There's long pauses where they are watching the television silently. And after that, they reinitiate talk, and they stop talking again. So the first position is an offer to reinitiate talk.
I'll just pause for a minute. Have to see. Everybody's got access to the handout? Mm-hmm. Everybody not have access?
Okay. In the first part, you are hearing the music. This is when the new participant is coming to the show. And I'll show you the excerpt for that. And this is what they are seeing on the TV screen when they're talking about this. So in the first part of the, for 12 seconds, they're watching the television in silence. And then participant C, I'll show her again, sitting here, this one. She makes an assessment of the new candidate. Okay, this is one position that I found assessments to commonly occur. And I called them undirected asides because these are different from the second example that I'll show in a bit. They don't generate further talk. What happens is they're watching the television in silence. One of them makes an assessment which doesn't generate any response. And they just keep watching the television. And I called them undirected asides, which and the features of them are they don't change their gaze and body orientation. They don't pick another, they don't choose the select the next speaker. And they're mostly delivered very quickly or in a lower voice, and they don't generate a response. So that is the first position that I found assessments. And this is another example. Right, I don't know whether you can see it clearly, it's quite dark, the video, but here again, they watch television in silence for 10 seconds, and then A, the one in the middle, I'll show it again. Songül Karlı is the presenter of the show, the female presenter of the show, and A is making an assessment about this presenter, that she's clueless. But this time, going back to the video, here we've got this, she's poking her, A is poking C, and then you can see the gaze shift there. She first pokes C and then receives a response from her, and then she changes her orientation towards M over there, and then she gets response from her as well. So this is the second kind of position that I found assessments talk is there's an offer to initiate talk, and this time it generates further talk. And we see the importance of embodiment and gaze here as well. Right. The second sequential position, I call them in and relevant to ongoing talk. This is in line with what we talked about second assessments. Basically, what happens is there's an assessment relevant description or noticing, and then we get the first assessment, which is followed by a second assessment. So I'll just do this very quickly. It's very similar to what we find in second assessments. So here, after 9 second silent TV watching, A starts with, and what Derek Edwards and Jonathan Potter called assessment relevant descriptions. She describes the woman's hair. She dyed the black hair into blonde, and dark hair grew on the bottom. This is what she says. And she changes her gaze as well, if you've noticed it. And then S makes the assessment, it doesn't look beautiful. And then A again, it's nice, not nice at all, and Z agrees with them. So this is another sequence. Right, I'll move on to the third one. This time, it is in an ongoing talk, but not relevant to it. This is what I thought was very interesting in TV audience talk. I've got two examples for this, with different features. So let's see. Okay, this one is hard to understand because that it's in the middle of a kind of joke. So this is Z, S, A. They're talking about S's mother-in-law and father, who are both widowed, and they're thinking of matchmaking them. That is the story. And when they are talking about you should matchmake them, this is what they're talking about. We go here. They're still talking about this joke, but their gaze just shifts towards TV screen and they see a new participant on the TV screen, new female participant. And then they just kind of close this topic with a new assessment. Oops. Okay, here, in overlap with Z's turn here, A points to the TV, this one is very nice. And then they start talking about this new woman in the show, that she's 53, but she doesn't look 53, kind of. Okay, here I want to get your attention to the fact that before the assessment is made, the three participants are all jointly making this joke. They're all taking part in it, okay? And then when the assessment is made, they all change their gaze back towards the TV and they're silent, there is talk about the new participant. But in the next example here, this one.
Bir şeyden sonra da maaşı kesiliyor. Değil mi? Şimdi ilk yeri çıkınca böyle 15 gün.
Okay, this time there is no talk among the three of them, but M here is talking about the number of candidates that the participants get in the show. And her argument is after a while, they don't get as many candidates, this one says. And C is not joining in this talk at all, but she's making another assessment of the participant on the show. But this time, it doesn't get responded to. And they don't get back to this assessment at all. And this is very commonly found when three of them are watching television. The two of them might be participating in, if you call it a participation framework, I'm not sure, but they are in a conversation. But the third one makes an assessment, doesn't get responded to, and they just leave it there. This is another position that I found assessments. And so in the first line, after a while though, Ayşe, they stop coming. We see the addressing turn there. Ayşe is the name of the participant in the middle, and which generates a response at lines 8. But in the middle here, line 4, C makes an assessment of the participant on the show. V which doesn't get responded to at all. Just move on. And the last one, projecting adjournments. I used to term the term adjournment because I wasn't very sure whether to call them lapses or adjournments, but in opening up closings, Shekloff and Sykes mentioned that very clearly, and I thought it fits well with the idea of adjournment, so I left it as adjournments here. I'll show you the video first. Okay. So in this example, they are making an assessment of a male participant in the show. And they are assessing his eligibility as a prospective husband in a negative way. He's not, this is an idiom in Turkish, he's not a sturdy shoe. But this is what they call it. And they start from here. He is a 50-year-old man. He was only married once. Has he not ever been married until that age? She makes this comment. We can still call it an assessment relevant description from the way she constructs her description of the guy. And then we get this response seeking here, don't you think so? Actually, A agrees with her in line 3 here. Yeah, it's kind of a same level agreement, but not upgrading her agreement or not a strong agreement. She just says yeah. And then M seeks for another kind of agreement from A. But she doesn't get this agreement. Instead, they all change their gaze back towards the TV here. I'll show it again. And after that point, M produces this proverbial expression. This man is not a sturdy shoe. Which then is followed by an adjournment when the topic is suspended, closed in this case, and they're just watching the television in silence. So, going back to the video. So they've got the mutual gaze here. So what I found in my data is proverbial expressions are used very commonly in these positions to show to display their alignment, that we've decided on this, we made our assessments, we are on the same page, and we can move on. So proverbial expressions are found in this position. And also another thing that I found is repetition of the first assessment. They make an assessment, I didn't put an example of this for the time limits, but they make a first assessment, they talk about it, and towards that they repeat the first assessment once more, and then that's closed. This is another kind of adjournments in my data. So in summary, I found these four positions: reinitiation of talk, in unrelated to ongoing talk, in but not related to ongoing talk, and projecting an adjournment. And why I think that they're very relevant to the idea of course, the assessment literature, but also the continuing states of incipient talk, where people are not just engaged in talk, but they are actually doing something else. The talk is not continuously sustained. It's allowed to have these long lapses when they're doing something else. And I thought that the sequential organization of assessments in my data has implications for understanding the overall organization of continuing states of incipient talk as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good. A lot of time for thoughts, observations, questions.
So the last point was that your findings have implications for understanding continuing states or ongoing states in incipient talk. Well, what are those understandings? What are the implications? I don't think you just said that it has implications, but what are the implications? Or what do we learn from your study?
Okay, I think the adjournments issue, how they initiate adjournments and how they get into talk and how they get out of the talk and how they do this without being accountable. That's what I thought was interesting, but these long lapses, not being accountable, and the data shows it quite well. And then the reinitiation of talk, they're very different from, in their paper they talk about openings would be different from, reinitiation of talk in this kind of data, or closings would be different from adjournments. But this hasn't been shown, or I haven't seen it before. But I think this kind of shows it how they can manage to get out of talk and do something else, and then get back into talk. But that sort of.
So Lewis first, then Saul. Lewis.
I'm just wondering whether the organisation of the talk was somehow related to what was happening on the programme as well.
Definitely.
So were there times, like discussions, times specifically, where they would join in with what people were saying on the programme? I looked at that relationship.
The happenings on the show really decides how they shape their talk. I've got some examples when, if you remember, I showed the short video biographies of the participants. In some cases, they just show this video biographies, just like one second, and then you get this unrelated assessments, one after another. Does that make sense? It's not very commonly found. If there was no TV there, you wouldn't just go and make like assessment of this and that without, you know, responding to that. But what happens on the show definitely decides on how they, you know, shape their.
So,
I'm quite curious about whether others, you yourself, have been just a little unsatisfied with the circularity of the initial definition assessments being actions which evaluate something. That seems like a very circular description to me.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, the conditional relevance of the second assessment, which is part of the continued state of talk, is almost required for there to be a sequential analysis of assessments, which is kind of what I see Pomerantz doing and much of the subsequent literature on epistemics and assessments and where that's gone. So I'm really troubled by this in my data and in other things that I see, is that in continuing states of incipient talk, or whatever they might be, because it's not clear how they're organised, how is it that you're still able to rely on that definition of assessments? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
That without there being conditional relevance of the second assessment, the whole sequential analysis of assessments seems to be a bit wobbly to me. Unless we just take as read that something that has the word useful in it is an assessment, which also seems to be.
But I'm quite challenged by what you're saying now while writing my thesis as well, because in this data, really, what we think about assessments, as Pomerantz puts it, like occurrence of a first assessment makes it conditionally relevant that second assessment will be there, but it is not in this case. If there's something else in the show, they just leave the assessment there. Some assessments don't get responded at all, as you've seen. So going back to the 2010 discussion on mobilizing responses, they mentioned continuing states of incipient talk there as again, but still, I couldn't get like enough explanations for that, and I struggled myself too, but this is all I got for now.
Sets up a whole range of questions about assessments, but I think that would take us down a rather different path. Could you point to something? Rose.
No, only at this time.
Surely.
I was wondering how you gave examples of three people in your clips. I wondered if it varied. You had family variations depending on the, you know, like two participants, for example, which you would imagine could work quite differently to three or more.
I've got more, like six, seven participants.
Okay.
It didn't work quite well with my analysis because the data collection didn't go very well, apparently. I couldn't hear most of the talk, so I just left them, to be honest. I just left them. But with two people, I think I should collect more data for that. All I've got is three people together, because I actually didn't arrange them to come together as three people, but when they are there, I just recorded. So it happened to be like three of them together. So.
Good. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Good. We have